From WAMC in Albany, this is the Legislative Gazette, a weekly magazine about New York State government and politics. Your host is David Gustina, with political commentary by Dr. Alan Shartok, political scientist and professor emeritus at the University at Albany. Statewide distribution for the Legislative Gazette is made possible by New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.
Coming up this week, we catch up with State Assembly Speaker Carl Hastie, who's been touring upstate New York. The battle to raise the minimum wage in New York continues, and Senator Charles Schumer wants returning veterans to fill open border agent positions. Those stories and more on the Legislative Gazette. New York State's Assembly Speaker Carl Hastie, a Bronx native, has spent a portion of the summer touring upstate New York. The speaker replaced Sheldon Silver, who was arrested on corruption charges earlier this year. The Legislative Gazette's Karen DeWitt reports.
Hastie has been to Buffalo, Binghamton, Syracuse, and Utica and surrounding areas as part of a listening tour. He wants to familiarize himself with issues that might not be front and center in New York City. Hastie says he's gained an appreciation of the beauty of upstate regions.
You know, I'm used to cement and things like that, and, you know, in the city, but you know, you've always known that upstate New York was beautiful, but just to see it and to feel it and live it yourself is just, this state is just extraordinary.
Hastie, dressed in a charcoal gray suit on a 90-degree day, received a tour of the Hudson River boat launch in Mechanicville, northwest of Albany. He says he's found that many of the same issues resonate in all parts of the state, having a solid infrastructure support system and economic and educational opportunities.
If you want to, you know, have jobs, there's certain things that community needs. You need infrastructure. You need transportation, and you need good schools for families.
Right. Mechanicville's the place to stop because of the great facilities.
Mechanicville City Supervisor Tom Richardson, who showed the speaker the new dock facilities, which include toilets and showers and easy access to restaurants and shops in town, says it means a lot to have an influential legislative leader visit.
To have him actually up here in upstate New York, I think it's terrific, and for him to see the communities and all of the people that are up here and the needs of all of the communities, I think it's tremendously important.
Paul Hink, a retired pharmacist from Minnesota, is touring the river for the first time along with his wife in a houseboat. It's part of a voyage that will take them north to Lake Champlain and eventually to the southern United States. He's pleased with the new dock and its amenities.
This is fantastic. This is really nice. It's well, right on the river, of course, so it's very convenient. Facilities were clean, new. It's great.
City Supervisor Richardson agrees with Speaker Hastie that upstate's crumbling infrastructure is a huge problem. He says his city is lucky enough to have received grants from the Regional Transportation Authority to replace bridges that are nearly a century old.
And we're replacing three bridges. Two of the bridges were built over 90 years ago.
The Speaker of the State Assembly also weighed in on a big issue for the region and for the entire Hudson River, General Electric's ongoing dredging of the river of toxic PCBs. They were dumped by the company back when it was legal to do so. The project is set to end this fall, but environmental groups and some local government leaders want to expand it. According to a report by Politico New York, Governor Cuomo has been talking to top GE executives, trying to lure the company's corporate headquarters back to the state from Connecticut. Hastie says any talks about convincing GE executives to relocate their headquarters back to New York should include discussions on the company's Superfund cleanup program.
I believe that companies should be good corporate citizens, and they have a social responsibility. And I think in the discussion on GE moving here, I think their responsibility and what they need to do here, I think, should be part of any discussion.
The governor's office had no comment. The speaker next planned to tour a farm. It uses automatic milking machines for its dairy cows. In Albany, I'm Karen DeWitt.
Joining us now, Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Chartok. Alan, we just heard from Karen DeWitt about State Assembly Speaker Carl Hastie, of course a Bronx native, going around and touring upstate, a summer tour. Does it help in any way?
Well, look, Hastie is out of the Bronx, and he's a Bronx boss. And he's surrounded by people and say, who he says to, make me better, make me more popular. So I say, okay, boss, we'll take you upstate. And he goes to upstate. There's a very famous story about a Jewish guy in rabbinical garb who goes to Biloxi, Mississippi, and he's followed by a group of rednecks. And he's very threatened, and he turns around and he says to them, what's the matter? You've never seen a Yankee before? So, so you know, obviously it can't hurt him. I don't see how it can hurt Hastie to be around and to show the flag and to show upstaters. Look, upstate is becoming more and more Democratic. We know that. And here's the Democratic boss. So he comes and he says, I've come to see you.
Reform groups say, Alan, failed public finance experiment should be a wake-up call to state lawmakers. The New York State Board of Elections recently issued its final report on an experimental public campaign finance system that had no participants. Government reform groups say it's another sign that the pilot program for one race in the 2014 election cycle was designed to fail.
I don't want to dignify this by taking it seriously. The fact of the matter was that there were certain forces to be in this state, one of whom was the governor, who said, okay, Tom DiNapoli, you want publicly financed campaigns, you're it. Thanks for volunteering. We're going to make you the guy. And of course, DiNapoli didn't take the bait. And so the whole thing was a failure because it was stupid from the beginning.
Governor Andrew Cuomo this week called for a crackdown, Alan, on the nearly naked women in body paint who pose for photos for money in Times Square. The call, of course, coming from the mayor and others, and it has been legal, however, for women to go topless in New York since 1992 when the state's Court of Appeals ruled in People versus Santorelli that New York's public lewdness laws did not apply to a woman bearing her breasts in public. State law also permits nudity, partial and full, in plays and other artistic performances. But an aide to Governor Cuomo says they did not believe the women were violating the lewdness laws, but did think their tactics flouted laws against harassment, aggressive panhandling, and impeding pedestrian traffic.
By the way, I think that's about right. I think that's correct. Those of us who have been accosted by people on the streets when we didn't want to be accosted, that's panhandling, and that needs to be paid attention to. To me, the biggest hypocrites in all of this are the tabloid newspapers who keep saying, terrible, terrible, isn't this so terrible, isn't this terrible? Here's another picture, a whole page of somebody who is, you know, bearing a breast and then putting these black lines over the nipples so that as if that protects them from any sensibilities that people may have about the whole issue. Look, the newspapers can't have it both ways. They can't rail against it and make sure that they use it, exploit it the way that they've been doing.
Finally, Donald Trump still making waves in the presidential contest. And we see candidates like Scott Walker shifting to a more hard stance like Trump. And on the other side, after his criticism of Mexicans and the immigration situation, we see one of his own workers not really happy about that.
No, one guy had the courage to stand up, and they're already, quote, looking at him, who works in one of the Trump buildings, but who works for a separate company which rents the space. Obviously, there's a certain amount of fury behind the scenes going on here about this guy, but good for him. It's nice to see somebody speaking up and having the guts to do that. You know, no question that you put yourself at risk when you do that.
The Correctional Association of New York calling for expanded federal investigation of the state prison system now, saying the death of a 30-year-old inmate after a confrontation with guards shows a complete overhaul is overdue.
It's probably true. You know, it's forever been known that there are these sort of vigilante, beat-em-up groups of prison guards. I have heard from several during these broadcasts who say it's not true. On the other hand, you can't have too much inspection. One guy who wrote me said, yeah, it was true on occasion, but it's really not a lot. Well, you know, if you're it and you're beaten up and you're a prisoner, that is disgraceful. Or you're raped, that is the kind of thing that if we're going to put people in prison, if we're going to incarcerate them, that we have to make sure doesn't happen. Because as we know, there are plenty of innocent people who end up getting sent to jail. And then years later, we find out that they didn't do it.
As Donald Trump continues to take the headlines in the presidential contest, we see an interesting profile in the New York Times on his sister. And the quote, bluntness runs in the family.
You know, I read that article and I was impressed by her.
Yeah.
You know, she's a judge. She has not traded on the Trump name. And she has been impressive as a sitting jurist. And there is something that almost everybody who's listening to this program knows. You really can't hold people responsible for what their brothers or sisters have done if they didn't do it. And I know that this is just general information that we all have. You know, it's just silly to say this judge, who's done very well in her career, been a tough judge and a good judge, should in any way be impugned because she has a brother who is a character.
Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Chartok. You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. The battle to raise the wage in New York continues. Franchise owners have filed formal objections to Governor Andrew Cuomo's plan to raise the minimum wage for fast food workers to $15 an hour, a prelude to a possible lawsuit. The Legislative Gazette's Dave Lucas explains.
The increase, which will impact an estimated 200,000 workers, was endorsed by a state wage board last month and is set to be phased in beginning at the end of the year, pending formal approval by Cuomo's labor commissioner. In a letter opposing the hike, a lawyer for the National Restaurant Association argues the increase unfairly applies to only national chain restaurants and infringes on the legislature's authority to pass minimum wage increases. In general, the business community has opposed the minimum wage hike. Lawsuits over the issue have been expected since the decision in late July. Jay Holland is the Government Affairs Coordinator for the National Restaurant Association.
The wage board process was completely unfair and arbitrarily targeted certain businesses for a minimum wage increase without justification. There's no logical distinction between working a register at a fast food restaurant and a retail store. The process violated a core democratic principle by not going through the established legislative process. The board did not have a representative from the restaurant industry, and every member of the board supported the increase before being appointed to it. Nothing about the process was fair, and that's why we're left with a poor public policy.
Franchise owners are considering whether to challenge the increase in court. Activist Mark Dunlay works with the campaign for a real minimum wage increase.
We do agree with his idea of trying to do it just for fast food workers, but particularly only for fast food workers for certain large companies, 30 franchises, does raise some legal questions about his strategy.
Meantime, a proposal floated by Ulster County lawmakers would establish a $15 an hour minimum wage for county employees beginning on January 1st. The measure came up for discussion Wednesday by members of the legislature's Ways and Means Committee. David Donaldson is vice chair of the Ulster County Legislature.
It would not affect a great deal of workers in the county because most are making more than the $15 an hour, but it would affect a few.
Action was postponed on the measure until September. Dunlay notes the Ulster County legislators are among a growing number of Americans believing wages need to be raised.
It's very gratifying to see that so many people believe that somebody who works needs to make enough to support their family. $15 an hour certainly gets people a lot closer to that. We wish that Governor Cuomo and his labor board would in fact actually support $15 an hour across the board.
If the Ulster legislation does make it through committee and is approved, it would go to County Executive Mike Hine. Hine supported the fast food worker wage hike. He's on record stating, quote, "It's smart economic policy." But he could not be reached for comment Tuesday on raising county workers' pay. If he nixed that proposal, the legislature could override a veto with a two-thirds vote. Again, Dunlay.
$15 an hour still falls short of a living wage in most parts of New York State, especially if you're somebody who has children. Probably the biggest problem in most communities is the cost of housing, especially downstate.
New York's minimum wage is currently $8.75 an hour and will rise to $9 an hour on December 31st.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Dave Lucas.
New York U.S. Senator Charles Schumer wants returning veterans to fill open border agent positions. He was in New York's North Country to push for passage of a bill he has sponsored requiring the Department of Homeland Security to recruit vets for jobs at Customs and Border Protection ports of entry. The Legislative Gazette's Pat Bradley has more.
Schumer toured the terminal at the Plattsburgh International Airport, which is undergoing a $55 million renovation that includes a new international arrivals facility. The Democrat used that as the background to highlight what he says is the need for more customs agents across the country. He secured $165 million in 2014 that allows Customs and Border Protection to hire 2,000 border officers nationwide, but the positions have yet to be filled. Schumer has introduced the Border Jobs for Veterans Act to end delays in Customs and Border Protection hiring and fill the open positions with people he says are pre-qualified.
Who better to protect our border than highly trained outgoing military service members? They know how to protect us. This legislation solves two problems. It will require DOD to work with DHS to identify service members with expertise needed to fill Border Patrol positions. This would help CPB with its problem finding adequate personnel. And second, it would provide good-paying jobs for veterans looking for work.
Iraq veteran Doug Moran thinks the bill is a great idea if it comes to fruition.
When the military trains you, you're on high alert. You know what to look for just by the experiences that transpired while you were in a war. You can tell right off the bat who's going to do what and when and where.
The Development Corporation Executive Director Paul Grasso, a veteran, chairs the Veterans Committee for the North Country Regional Economic Development Council. He is optimistic about the proposal's potential if bureaucracy doesn't get in the way.
For the jobs he's proposing, you certainly bring in leadership, teamwork, mission, and you bring in the concept of security. All of those things that you've learned in the field and in your training. And this program recognizes that and helps them to get a job that has sustainable wages, great benefits, and a career path.
The bill requires the Departments of Defense and Homeland Security to jointly identify service members who can work at ports of entry and to expand recruiting programs for those posts. Clinton County Veterans Service Agency Director Stephen Bowman is optimistic about the opportunities the bill creates.
In the bill, he said that it was going to make it easier for disabled veterans to find jobs as well. So that opens a door for veteran exemption on federal employment, which can bypass much of the red tape that it takes to apply for these federal jobs. Because let's face it, most of our military personnel have already gone through security evaluations. All they'd have to do is update that. Most of them have worked with multi-million dollar pieces of equipment before. So, you know, what better kind of person would you want to handle a border area?
Senator Schumer cites data from the New York State Department of Labor indicating that veteran unemployment in the state is 7.6% compared to 6.5% for non-veterans. The Border Jobs for Veterans Act is co-sponsored by Republican Senator Jeff Flake of Arizona.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Pat Bradley.
You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. Seven upstate regions are competing for $1.5 billion in state funding as part of Governor Andrew Cuomo's Upstate New York Economic Revitalization Competition. Economic development leaders are meeting with community members across the state. The Legislative Gazette's Lucas Willard was at one such forum in the Mohawk Valley.
Leaders from the six counties of the designated Mohawk Valley region heard from locals on the campus of Fulton Montgomery Community College. The MV500 group, initiated by Oneida County Executive Anthony Picente in March, is attempting to organize the community and gather input needed for the region's bid for one of three $500 million economic development prizes. MV500 co-chair Alicia Dix heard comments from residents of communities large and small of the area that sits at the base of the Adirondack Park.
It's really about engaging our six counties to get one unified voice, and we can't do that in a boardroom. We need to do that by going out and meeting with the community members and having forums like this for them to give opportunities to speak. It's not about us telling them what we're going to do. It's about them telling us, what's right, what's wrong.
The panel heard about many of the issues they'd like to see addressed in an economic development plan: infrastructure, renewable energy, property taxes, historical preservation. The list went on. Karen Krause, village clerk of St. Johnsville, is a lifelong resident of the Montgomery County community. She said while much of the upstate revitalization conversation these days is focused on high tech and industry, the small communities need their own kind of promotion for assets like museums and other sites.
We need to have more focus on advertising on the thruway that there are small villages on the just off the beaten path.
The high-tech hubs of Utica and Albany sit on either side of the Mohawk Valley. Krause joked about the investments made in the valley's bookends.
If you clean your living room and your kitchen, but the dining room's in between and it's a mess, what do you got,
Amsterdam Mayor Anne Thain said her city, while certainly different in size, has many of the same goals as what she heard from the surrounding small towns.
And so that's redevelopment of our waterfront areas, our downtown, focusing on repurposing factories and revitalizing neighborhoods. And we heard a lot of that today in this room.
But as the MV500 team puts together its bid, Montgomery County Executive Matt Ossenfort said it's important not to focus on only the negative, but what makes the region unique.
We have a lot of strengths and we need to build on them. We are an affordable, low-cost option in a beautiful area with a lot of opportunity, whether it's recreational or otherwise. And sometimes it's good to focus on our problems and things we need to fix, but it's also good to show and strengthen and get the word out about all the positives that are going on here. And oftentimes that might get left behind a little bit.
Other areas eligible for one of the three $500 million awards are Mid-Hudson, Capital Region, Central New York, North Country, Southern Tier, and Finger Lakes.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Lucas Willard.
And that about does it for this week's show. We had help from the New York State Public Radio Network. Copies are available. Call 1-800-323-9262. That's 1-800-323-9262. Ask for program number 1534 or just listen or podcast on the web at wamc.org. And join us again next week at this same time for more news on New York State government and politics. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm David Gustina.
Statewide distribution for the Legislative Gazette is made possible by New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.